Feeling really lucky to introduce you today to Brooke Skinner Ricketts. She is a CEO of Beyond Barriers and co-founder. And what a career. She's worked at almost every public company you can imagine, and most recently as a CMO of Cars.com. Big time jobs. And yet she started this entrepreneurial journey with a real passion for helping women advance their careers. Something I'm super passionate about and I know you're gonna find very, very interesting. Let's listen in to Brooke. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Excited to have you on the Lady Boss podcast. You have so much to teach us and so many things that we can certainly get behind on your journey to entrepreneurship. So as you look back, I think they always refer to entrepreneurship as journeys, you know, infant toddler. Do you think Beyond Barriers is in the infant stage or are you in toddler stage yet?
I think we're definitely in toddler.
Okay.
I think, you know, we had the privilege of kind of beta testing the idea for about a year and a half, just sort of trying it out in different contexts. And so that, I think we've moved through the diaper changing phase, the late night diaper changing phase. And I think we've got something that's rolling. But the real build part of the toddler is taking it beyond the current core product, which is like a boot camp, and into a real platform. So still a lot to nurture and water and weed.
For sure.
As with toddlers.
Yeah.
I think I would say early toddler stage.
So Brooke, when you refer to the beta test, were you off on your own in the company, or were you still dabbling, working a job, and then, you know, getting ready to do your big entrepreneurship journey?
Yeah, I was still working full-time.
Okay.
As a C-suite executive at a public company and, you know, leading a huge team and replatforming a 20-year-old website and doing all of those things. And this really started out as a kind of a friendship journey. We started talking about this concept, and then it very quickly turned into, wait a minute, like we could do this together. You know, we'd love to help our friends however we could, and then it turned into this could be a thing that we all do together. So.
Wow, that's incredible. Yes. So that's what I was trying to refer to is your last job was at a public company, you were CMO, you had a massive undertaking, I know, with a website and other marketing initiatives. And if that weren't enough, you decide to start a friendship journey. I hadn't heard you refer to it like that. I love that. And beta test. So by the time you determined that we weren't going to make this just a friendship, help people, what really drove you to say, hey, I'm going to leave my public company, you know, great salary, great perks, great everything, and jump off and be my own boss?
Yeah. So I, like so many others, did my COVID soul search, right? And so, you know, preceding this conversation that kind of tipped off this company, I had been searching and thinking sort of, what do I want next? We had been talking succession at my company, which was what I thought I wanted my entire life, was to run and lead a public company. And then I got very close and realized that I wanted to spend my time in a different way, right? It wasn't about the company. I love the company. I love the people.
Yeah.
And the work that they're doing. I just felt like there was something more meaningful for me. And so I had been on this kind of seeking journey. Our friends Nikki and Monica came to us sharing, you know, the thinking that they had around this concept, and I just got really excited about it, imagining I would consult, you know, and just sort of help them get off the ground. And then one night I was talking to my wife Laura about sort of what am I going to do next, and she said, you know, you've talked to so many different companies and you've done so many different things. I don't think it's out there. She said, I think you're going to have to buy or build something. She said, I think this is the moment where you just say, like, I don't think you're going to find something where it's somebody else's thing. I think it's time for you to take the leap, which sort of caught me off guard. And then I thought, you know what, I think she's right. So she was really instrumental in.
Go, Laura, you know, and hello, Laura.
right. Yeah, well, she's in it with me. So
I know. We'll talk about that in a sec. But
yeah.
I think, you know, when I had my first sort of like, I can't get this on the inside, I was 38, you're a little bit around that age too. I don't know if that's when the real midlife crisis starts. But I remember really just feeling like the fear of regret would be much bigger than the fear of failure for me. Does that resonate at all with you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I, Yeah, I mean, I was like kind of racked with pandemic fear, with like insecurity, with imposter syndrome, but also just thinking, you know, like one of my biggest fears was, you know, having my kids be teenagers and look at the way I had spent my time and say, what were you doing, right? You could have been doing so much more. You could have been doing so much. And so that, you know, some of my own insecurities there. But that was part of what drove me, was I really wanted to feel like what I was doing was meaningful to me. I know that what I was doing in the corporate world was meaningful to a lot of people. And where I landed was I needed to feel like this was meaningful to me and really helping kind of be the change that I want to see in the world. So that's what drove me to take the leap.
So obviously when you have daughters, I think you think about things, and I don't, I have sons, but I come from a girl family, and my dad was just so passionate about we could be anything, we could do anything. And I heard that from a very young age. Despite that my mom was a stay-at-home mom, they told me I could be anything. They believed it so much, they sent us to private school with girls, and I never encountered until I got into my first job what I know is the reality, which is what Beyond Barriers is dealing with so much today. So how did you get that message, I mean, prior to becoming a mother of girls?
Yeah, so my mom was a feminist, and she told me I could be whatever I wanted to be, and I told her I wanted to be a bird. So that was my plan. I was going to grow up to be a bird, and then that dream was crushed. and I figured out...
A smart child. She's, you know, like, what do I do with that?
Yeah, thank you. So I think in terms of kind of... I think part of my success was just fully embracing my naivete. I started working in the corporate world when I was 19 years old. I don't think I had any idea what I was doing. I walked into rooms like people should listen to me. And sometimes, you know, I was told no. And then I'd be like, okay, you know, because I was a puppy, you know, when I started. And then I started to gain some momentum. And the momentum was sort of what carried me forward. And then I started to get smarter. And I had some amazing mentors. But I did encounter it pretty early. I mean, my first job was, my first client at the ad agency was Cummins Engine. So my first assignment was go out to a truck stop, pay truckers $20 to talk to you about ads about environmental regulations. So you can imagine me, like 20 years old, like, I'm ready to, you know, and a lot of them didn't accept the money, and it was like a very
no-go.
Yeah, anyway. But so, you know, very early on working in trucking, working in alcohol and tobacco and motor oil and all these very glamorous industries that were mostly dominated by men, I kind of found my sea legs pretty early. But I think a big piece of it for me was just having this really naive assumption that I should be there. And that's kind of how I showed up. And like I said, you know, sometimes you get knocked down, and that's part of the learning journey as well.
So I know it worked. I mean, so you obviously figured it out, and I like, you know, sea legs is important, but when didn't it work that you were a girl?
Yeah, good question. So there was, we pitched, when I was in working at an ad agency, we went down to Tennessee to pitch a company. It was a family-owned clothing company. And it was me and a bunch of guys, and we went down. It was kind of a pre-pitch meeting. We were going to try out the pitch on sort of the, like, second in command to the head of the family. Okay. And so we go down, and we're all dressed up, and we got our big pitch, and the pitch went great. And my colleague, who was the president of the company, stayed behind to get the feedback, and he comes back to the car. And he shared with us that the feedback was, you all were really great. We love the pitch. We love the vibe. But when you come back to meet Mr. So-and-so, you might want to leave your little lady behind. And I was, oh man. I mean, I just was like every feminist vote in my life. I was seething. And then I remembered what another good friend had told me, which is don't get in a fight with a pig in the mud because the pig will just...
Wait, hold on. Tell me that again.
Don't get in a fight with a pig in the mud.
Okay.
Because the pig has fun and you just get dirty. Right.
Yeah.
So we flipped it. Everybody called me the little lady as a joke from then on. And that became my moniker around the office. And that company ended up going bankrupt. And so that was sort of my, you know, sweet return.
That was your fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a really good attitude. And I kind of, I in retrospect, I worked in all the boys clubs. Mm-hmm. And I never really knew it because I just didn't feel, I mean, I so relate to that. I didn't know that it was a problem. I mean, I'm sure they thought it was a problem. I know it was a problem. But, you know, I think when you outwork them, you outperform them, you outproduce, it's hard to say, well, you know, that's our little lady. So do you think that was really one of your secrets, is that you just ground, you know, you did three people's job instead of doing your job. Is that, was that one of your hacks?
I think it was until that didn't work, right? Yeah. Like I remember the moment where, you know, part of my story is I just sort of grabbed every opportunity that came my way, come hell or high water. Yeah. And until I burned out, right? I remember being up at 2 a.m. working on a deck and, you know, thinking like, I can't do this, and crumbling. And that's when I started to learn how to ask for help, right? Yeah. And another great mentor said to, he looked at me and he said, look, when you say no to something, you're actually saying yes to something else.
Yeah.
And that for me, I had never thought about that way. I just thought if I say no, I'll be letting this person down, or I'll be passing up this opportunity. Or I thought about all the things that wouldn't happen, as opposed to, by choosing to prioritize my time in this way, I'm actually, you know, supporting this piece of the business, or this, you know, this priority. And so that reframe was so critical for me, because it just helped me, one, it helped my people pleaser, you know, internal people pleaser, but also just helped me start to get ruthless about prioritization, right? And that was the beginning of a journey in terms of, like, not just taking whatever came my way because somebody else needed it done, but thinking about, okay, like, what's my agenda here? What am I trying to get out of this situation? Yeah. Really taking the wheel on my career way later than I probably should have. But that's a big piece of what we do with Beyond Barriers, is help women not just get the navigational skills that they need to go further faster, but also locate themselves in the equation, right? What am I trying to accomplish? What are my goals? How do I bring those goals to the table? How do I ensure that I not only accomplish what I need to accomplish for the tasks of my job, but get what I need out of this, right? Because it takes two to tango. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're taught that, intentionality is selfish.
Right.
You know, intentionality is, you know, we'll just let the guys get what they want, and you'll, the rest will come, and your path is just so different than that. So now we find you're in the, you know, Beyond Barriers, where you're helping women, you said, get there faster. So what does that look like? If you had your dream and you build this company, how do you measure the success and the impact?
Yeah. So the way we're talking about it now is number of careers transformed. So we're working, we're actually working directly with companies. So it's a B2B sale. And we partner with companies and we say, bring us your high potential talent, right? Who are somehow stuck, or who aren't navigating the organization the way that you think that they could. There are a couple operating insights that got us here. One, we firmly believe, and we know, that the world is more powerful when everyone's empowered, right? We know that women are the largest group of underleveraged employees in the world, right? The data is very, very clear on that. And then for each of us as leaders, we had experience mentoring and leading women for whom the challenge was not ability or aptitude or ambition. It was this idea of navigational skills. I don't know what I'm not doing. I'm not taking the time to invest in myself. I'm prioritizing other things in my life because that's where I am life stage wise, right? So taking a moment to understand those navigational skills. And then, you know, you can imagine, and the data shows this too, that if less than 50% of your workforce is fully empowered, like, you're leaving money on the table, right? And actually, McKinsey just did this study that in companies where women lead, the share performance and profits are 50% greater, right? So it's like, this is an obvious that we're just leaving this money on the table, right? It's an opportunity not only to empower and enable perspectives and people, but also really to, you know, fire up the engine in a really different way.
Well, I think if you don't talk about that, you know, sometimes you can't get all the people's attention that you need. I mean, you need companies to buy in, so you have to talk about profits, sadly, instead of talking about 50% of their workforce and filling the gap. All the things that are so positive, you've got to, you know, turn to ROI. Now, that said, did I hear this right? 3 years out of college, the average woman is making 25% less for the same role as her male counterpart is?
Yeah. It starts so early. And I think you and I talked about this. Like, I have negotiation conversations with our babysitters when they come over, because it makes me so mad that women don't, we just don't learn how to do
whatever
this, right?
Whatever you think.
Yeah, I'll pay you whatever. And it's
there are some people that don't know how to negotiate. Maybe they didn't have a mentoring. But there's definitely some that know how. So are they getting left behind?
You know, I think it depends on the company. So I can share some experience from public company, but also comp committee conversations where I've sat on boards. And I think, at one of my companies, we were really clear about every year going through with a fine tooth comb, just data, right? And making sure that there weren't the inequities that the data shows there ought to be, and correcting for those progressively over time. And then similarly with comp committee conversations, I mean, I think what you start to see is one, women get left behind, but you also start to see the implicit biases in the comp conversations, right? Yeah. And one of the key things that I think women need to know is men are often valued based on their potential and women are valued based on their performance. And we often look at ourselves that way too, right? So if you the LinkedIn data shows that men will apply for a job if they have like 6 out of 10 of the qualifications, and women feel like they need 11 out of 10, you know? And so if we're valuing ourselves based on what we've done, then we're only gonna do more of what we've done or a little bit more. If men are saying, absolutely, I could crush that, right? But then when you start to listen to the language around comp conversations, you also start to hear leaders talking about the people on their teams that way. Like, he's got this, he would totally crush it. And then for the woman, like, I don't know, do you think she can do this? Has she done it before? And same thing applies with VCs, right? We see this in the VC, in so many VC conversations with women, you get asked about all the objections and all the excitement and how, what if, but if, but that, versus with men, they talk about the possibility and the opportunity. So I think one of the things we're really focused on is how do women in those conversations shift the conversations, pivot their perspective, and show up in a really different way? Because if A plus B equals C, if you change B, then C changes, right? And so that's a piece of the puzzle. The other piece of the puzzle that's in development is teaching leaders who aren't women how to lead in a more inclusive way, right? How to listen in a different way, how to encounter their biases that that may or may not be intentional or conscious, right? But just learned, right? Because this is, there are systemic problems, and we don't believe we're going to break the system, but we do believe we're going to, you know, by changing people, we'll change the world. So
you speak about VC. Yeah. Is your company self-financed, or did you go out and raise money?
So we have some pre-seed capital, and we'll be raising next year. So we've got enough to get us. The fun thing about this company is we're making money, and we're making enough money to sustain ourselves.
Oh, great.
It's really just about the vision that we have. You know, we want to build, and we want to start doing real customer acquisition. And as a former CMO, I know how expensive that is.
Absolutely. So and I just think that, you know, for what you do, what you stand for, it'll be interesting to know how that process will be for you, knowing all the stats going into it. You know, on the other hand, and I don't think I want to know your lens on this. Does your name help you or hurt you in the business world?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. I've so on the one hand, we have, you know, Laura and her family, and then the Ricketts part of my name, and then we have my career, you know, and I think both of them converge in different ways. So as an example, we're going to a conversation. I'm sitting on a panel for founders and funders. And I looked at Laura and I said, you should really come with me because we're both, right? Like, we're both founders and funders, right? and we show up at the table with really different conversations, really different perspectives. And we bring to the table really different perspectives. But I think as an example, one of the verticals where Beyond Barriers has been really successful is in the financial vertical. And, you know, Laura and her family have a lot of experience and connections in that vertical. So I think in that way, it's helped open doors. I haven't encountered a world where a name opens a door and does a deal. I think a name opens a door, right? And then it's on you to screw it up or, you know, make it sing, right? So so I think we've had some advantages there. And also there's just the, you know, getting out there and hustling part of it, which I enjoy.
Well, that you've got a lot of. All right, so let's go back. So today, you know, you're basically running an online company. And I think that's obviously an awesome platform. How much of this, when I grew up in my career, you know, peer groups, Vistage, YPO, things like that, which are not online tools, were the way that we got professional development in other networking groups. Has the world of young people pivoted to they really will take their sort of guidance and in their growth and their trajectory online only?
Yeah, they will. And we're seeing like some of our original cohorts like go on vacation together, right? So they're finding ways to connect outside of the world. And, you know, I think, you know, women like to connect in general.
Yeah,
And I think part of this will include some convening, you know, events where we actually do bring people together. You know, professional development, it's like a $3 trillion industry, and most of that money gets wasted because, one, it's, you know, the average amount of spend on an employee is about $1,300. It doesn't get spread like peanut butter. You know, the rock stars get most of the money. And for us, we're really focused on mid-career, which is where you see the extreme dip in numbers. It's also the moment where women aren't really investing in themselves, right? So there's an opportunity to say, this is price for scale, right? This is not YPO level or LGC level. You know, this is a reasonably priced, approachable opportunity to take a minute and really accelerate the success, you know, of the team, the company, and the individual.
So just define mid-career, kind of give me more of what that really looks like.
Yeah, so we try not to talk about it in terms of age because life stage, you know, changes. We all encounter life at different
stages. We all live forever, so.
And that too. So I would say director level, you know, kind of senior manager, director level. And that's really where we start to see, really after manager, you just start to see the numbers. And part of it is, you know, women are taking not customer-facing roles, which are less lucrative. There are tons of dynamics. There are also a lot of assumptions women make about, if I'm getting this flexibility, then I shouldn't have these expectations of the company. And then companies make expectations about what women want and don't want. And most of those reasons are misplaced and wrong and just not that great, right? Yeah. And so I think if you can start to pick away at some of those and light up the potential, right, you start to just see more powerful results. That's what we've seen.
I think it does sort of parallel to what we were talking about, that it starts early in a career. Mm-hmm. You're also kind of attacking that at the earlier part of the career so that should these women become directors and have an aspiration to be CEO of a public company, they've got a trajectory and time to really build out that those skill sets that, you know, they may or may not have. I really resonate with the part about the professional development being at the sort of rock star level, because when I was in our public company after we'd sold our business, they spent a lot of money on very few of us. Mm-hmm. And we did travel the world and get coached by wonderful people. And in fact, I thought it was funny, the coach actually was the one who told me, you know, I don't see you here.
Wow.
I see you starting a holding company. And I'd never even heard the word. And I thought, what is that? That's so great. And I went and really, this is the germination and seed planting that is what I'm building today, which I'm sure they didn't really sign up to spend a bunch of money to have themselves tell me I should leave the company. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think it's that the philosophy is, do you spread a little bit of love on a lot of people, or do you spread a lot of love on your high pros? And I think, saying that your model is we go and we really try to get into organizations and spread a lot of love across a lot of people.
That's right. Yeah. And look, I think the other piece is, what's the company facing, right? Some companies are facing governmental requirements to have more women at the top. Companies are facing moral challenges. Some companies are just facing, we're not getting what we need out of this talent pool. Some companies are facing retention issues, right? So whatever the issue, that or velocity or cross-functional connection, right? And the program that we run can help with all of those things if it's framed correctly, right? And so a big piece of what we do is get to know kind of what's the challenge that you're facing and why are you interested in investing here? I would say the reason that this is such a seamless sale is because everybody recognizes that they're leaving opportunity on the table. Everybody recognizes that women, I mean, look, the pandemic, right? Women left at such a high rate, and nobody's having a great time pulling that talent back in. And we also all know that results get better when there are more perspectives around a problem, right? Like all that data is really clear. And so I think we see companies and leaders, you know, really waking up. But the other thing that we really see is, you know, when we have a conversation with someone like you, who's had the experience of climbing the ladder, the broken ladder, you know, herself, it's like, yep, where do I sign up? I'd love to, you know, I know the 10 women who I've mentored or who are in this organization who need this kind of spark, and let's go, you know, so it becomes a...
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, if I'm redundant, I'm sorry, but I have to tell this story mostly for our listeners because it was such a pivotal moment in my career. You know, when we sold our company, went into a public company, $13 billion global company, great place. I mean, they did a lot of things really well. The second year I won top, you know, GM of the year out of, 200 branches, and we go to the award ceremony and they give me a green jacket, size 44 large, like a man's green jacket, which in golf, if you're a golfer, signifies something really great, but didn't mean anything to me. You know, I come from a clothing family, so I was like, where's the Prada green jacket? But that was bad, but it was just signaling that they'd never had a woman win. Okay. And then I went in the bathroom and there's a woman crying, telling me, oh my gosh, I've been here 20 years and I've never seen a woman on stage. And at that very moment, they're telling me, you can be the CEO, you can be the CEO, you can be the CEO. And I knew that moment, I'm not going to change these old guys and dockers. And nor do I want to. Right. And I've got to go back and be an entrepreneur, which is harder, less lucrative at the beginning, way more stressful, cortisol, I mean, all the things. And yet it's the only thing that makes me happy. So you brushed right up against the top of that same exact journey. Do you really think they were going to make you the CEO?
I think it was on the list with a couple other people, right? Yeah. And you just never know. Yeah. But I'll also share, you know, every job that I left from the time I was 20, when I left my first job, I got the, they call it the keys to the kingdom talk, you know, where some usually old guy was like, this could all be yours. You could do that.
What do you need?
At a certain point, you know, and it's sort of like tempting and interesting, but also, you know, you just hit a point where you're like, this is my career. I got to manage it, you know, myself. And your story about the green jacket, you know, one of my co-founders had gotten an award for entrepreneurship for being a woman of color, and she showed up, and she was the only one there, right? And so she's like very honored and felt great about winning. And if it's a like two horse race, then kind of like, right, you know, and one of the things that compelled one of my co-founders left a really huge career in corporate as well. The two of us talk a lot because we have that experience. But one of the things that compelled her was scale, right? So like even at Google and Goldman and Bank of America, where she was influencing, you know, thousands and thousands of people, the opportunity to scale even bigger and to make a bigger impact, right, by starting this thing and making
it. And not
it
in
scale.
One location and lots of companies.
Everywhere.
So how do you split up the duties? You've got three co-founders, as I understand it, and you, Laura, and your friend, is that
four
of you? Okay, so how do you split up the duties today?
Yep. So Nikki is our co-founder and CEO, and she's an entrepreneur. She's done 0 to 1 100 times, and so she's doing the business development. She's doing the a lot of the kind of strategy along with. She and I partner on strategy.
Okay.
Laura is a board member and co-founder. So she really comes, she's kind of like our eagle eyes, right?
Yeah.
She comes in and helps create connections, but also helps with an outside perspective because we get, you know, we're in the forest. It's sometimes hard to see the trees. Monica is our chief learning officer. So she's the professor. She's developing the curriculum and she's done this, you know, 100 times for a lot of different companies. And so she's really thinking about the customer experience, that, you know, what's going to really be a transformative experience for our participants and then also deliver the results. And then I'm president, so I'm, you know, leading the operations the day-to-day, but also marketing and product, which is, you know, where I come from. So, so you know, I'm the opener, Nikki's the closer. You know, we have a really great handoff going there from a sales perspective. And then we just actually deepened our team with a chief technology officer who's going to help us build out the platform, which will take it beyond kind of the boot camp and into really, you know, the Thrive platform. So.
Sure. Wow. Congratulations. It's, I feel like, you know, it'd be really helpful to just think about some words that we should use in our language around customers, prospects, suppliers that, maybe kind of endorse what you stand for. I would love to know kind of how to spread that message, outside of the direct spread, which we'll certainly do, but tell us, how do we really, because I think sometimes when you hear, you know, diversity, inclusion, and these very like kind of PC words right now, it tunes out a certain segment.
Totally.
So what are things that we can say to help have the conversation, which I just am so interested in learning?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, we really start from the performance angle, right? That it's just, you're leaving 50%, like 50% more is right in front of you. And intuitively, it sort of stands to reason. We're pretty intentional about not being like diversity tech, because I think you're right. It's not only does it tune some people out, but it's just a smaller piece of the pie in terms of what companies are investing in, right?
Yep.
And especially as we head into whatever this next environment is going to be, right? I think companies are going to be looking for things that juice up their performance, you know, that deliver the results, that help with the retention, you know, and engagement of employees. So I think, you know, when you think about making this investment, it's It is about the individual employee, and it's about, you know, it's the rising tide raises all ships, right? And so if you get, and we know this, you've had superstars on your teams, right? Where you get someone and you just see the spark start to fly, and then they're just unstoppable, right? And and that's the idea, is if you can nurture that earlier, not only do you create loyalty, you create connection, but they start to find more meaning in their work, right? Because they're in the driver's seat. And when people find meaning in their work, they're so loyal, right? They want to help. And when they have skin in the game, especially, right, which is where this often ends up leading, then they become your best performers and ultimately your future leaders. So
who does it best? Which company do you see out there that you say, wow, they are really crushing this?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Really early on, you might know Andrew Swinand at Publicis Leo Burnett. He's the CEO, and he's an old friend. And we had a conversation about, you know, doing some creative work, and he was like, and I was sort of sharing the general numbers, and then he shared their numbers, and I was like,
Not surprising, though. Not surprising. It's, you know, they have a big, you know, PR marketing. So let's take somebody that's not in a traditionally female, you know, it was okay for girls to be in PR and marketing. Mm-hmm. Let's put them aside. Who else does it well?
Yeah. So a company we're working with right now is Ares Global Management, which is a private equity firm. And they approached us. You know, we've got some connections. I've done some consulting with them and connections with them, a number of the founders. And they started with a pilot, and then they have really scaled this across their network. And part of it is because they have, you know, in finance, you see the same pattern, right? Yeah. There's a level that women get to, and then they stop, right?
Yeah.
And so they're using it not only to, you know, empower and engage their female employees, but also connect them, right? It's a huge organization with employees all over the place. And so when they have this kind of fellowship experience, it creates this network of women who are committed to helping each other thrive, right? We're also working with a couple of private equity companies where they're leveraging it cross-portfolio. So while every company may not have 10 or 12 women because they're earlier stage companies, you've got two here, two here, two here, and two here. And then they start to have a common language and a common experience, and the dividends pay to the private equity firm, right? Because they're the ones sort of supporting this journey. And of course, every private equity firm is looking at the talent, thinking about how can I leverage talent, you know, across the portfolio. And so so it becomes a tool to supercharge the investment.
That's a success story. Because that's a traditionally and historically super male, because of the finance background, and to have that kind of success story, I think that's, you know, those are the, you know, the money lenders that we all have to look to as the people to fund our businesses and our visions, because they get it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, even if it's because they figured out that, you know, women will make them more money, whatever. It's true. And I think that it's just exciting to me to hear you talk about those kind of companies, because it's really important work that, you know, is going to live well after you're not around. And I think what you and Laura are doing is just incredible. I hope we can spread the word on the Lady Boss podcast, because we all have to think about things differently. We shouldn't be having this conversation in 2022. We shouldn't have to be, you know, dealing with these statistics, but we do. You know, we talked about the fact that the queen just passed away last week, and you know, those are things we've got to have the next queens coming up, and really, if that's intentional work we have to do, so be it. And congrats to, you know, taking the entrepreneurial leap, because it's not easy, but you are sure making it look easy.
Thank you. I appreciate what you're doing with the podcast, and I really appreciate being here. And it's a lot of fun. It's fun in different ways. It's hard in different ways, but creatively, it's a really special journey.
No one dies from hard work.
That's right.
Okay, we're at the part of the Lady Boss podcast where we ask 5 quick questions and we see if we can get some more insight into our guests. Brooke, what's the best business book you're reading right now?
Ooh, right now. Well, I'll tell you the one that I go back to all the time, which is Women Don't Ask. It's a negotiation book.
Okay.
And somebody gave it to me a long time ago. My copy is like, you know, highlighted and dog-eared. And it's just a really good grounding reminder. That's the one. And then the one that I read most recently was Adam Grant's Give and Take.
Okay.
Good book. Which I love as well.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, good suggestions. Okay. What's the hardest thing for you to do at work? Hardest thing that really brings you to your knees?
I am a very accomplished and yet not very organized person. So often the details will bring me to my knees. But I think, you know, we were just talking about this as well. Early in my career, I got the feedback that people wanted more of me on my team. They wanted more of me to show up. And I took that as they wanted me to work harder. And I couldn't possibly imagine how I could work harder. And then someone, a very nice friend, translated it for me. They said, no, dummy, you know, actually, they want more of you at work. Right? They want you to show and share yourself, right? And share your story. And so that's something that I try to be really intentional about. I've done a lot of writing on Medium, and every single time I push the button to send or publish, I get this sort of like, I don't know, do people care? Do people want to hear from me? But the interesting thing is, what I found is that the things that people are most engaged in are not the, you know, the sort of like how to the business technical stuff. It's the story, right? People engage with stories, people engage with people. And I think that's one of the things we see in the journey with Beyond Barriers is at the end of the journey, we actually have people write their own story. And I spent my career writing brand stories for some of the world's biggest brands. I had the hardest time writing my own story. So ironically, marketing myself.
It's funny to hear because I feel like you're very, very vulnerable online. And I so appreciate that. I just never, I'm with you. I just always feel like that's the part we're supposed to leave at home. But mm-hmm. you lead with, hi, I'm Brooke and I'm married to a woman and you keep going. And I'm like, let's go. And yet it's just not innately what in your career you think they want to hear. And right. It's really cool to hear that you've gotten feedback that that is what they want to hear. Totally. Thanks for sharing that. Who is the top mentor in this last decade for you personally and professionally?
So I moved to Chicago to work for a woman named Ellen, and she recruited me. This is more than a decade ago, but she pulled me in when I was in my early 20s and then quickly trained me to take her job when she retired. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know what was going on until she told me she was retiring, and then I sort of went back and went, oh yeah, she was, you know, and she literally at every turn, I quote her at least 3 times a week. I have a list of Ellen sayings.
Ellenisms.
She left me this beautiful post-it note when on her way out the door, and it said, don't forget to eat, sleep, breathe, and pee, because men will get up in the middle of a meeting and go to the bathroom, and women will hold it. You know? Yeah. It's a silly thing. But she just taught me so much, not only about being a great businesswoman, but also being a great human. And I look to her and think of her all the time. Oh. And then I'm going to do two because my grandfather, who passed away about 5 years ago, who was just my hero in every way, and he was amazing. At 88, I was working at Twitter, and I would come visit him, and he would have read everything in the Wall Street Journal about Twitter and just been ready to have a conversation with me. Uh-huh. But also just really wise and really caring and somehow really with it, you know, into his 90s. So it's amazing.
Nothing better than grandparents. They're such game changers.
Yeah.
Okay, what would you consider your superpower?
I call it, so we actually, part of the journey is we talk about our moniker, right? And so what defines us? I'm a power generator, right? Like I take possibility, I turn it into performance. I take lots of creative ideas I can filter through and really identify the thing that's going to make whatever saying, right? So that's my focus. That's how I've been successful is identifying power to create growth.
You're like the person who invented that traction, that buzz traction, you know, and it's so important because I think so many people are just the idea people, but those aren't the people getting paid. That's the right. Executors are the people getting paid.
That's right. Execution, you know, so is everything.
It's not as glamorous sounding, but it's the glamour. All right. Awesome. And then maybe one hack that you could share with people about how you fit all of what you do into one day.
I think the hack is that you can't do it and have it all the time, but you can be good at what you're doing in the moment, right? I think the hack is really mindfulness and intentionality and accepting that you're not going to be great at everything. I actually do think that's the hack. It's really hard for me because I wake up every day believing that I can accomplish everything on my list, and then I get very frustrated and sad at the end of the day when I haven't. But I guess that the filter that I'd add to that was something my grandfather told me, which is something his father told him, which was do the hardest thing on your list first.
Yes.
And everything else will melt away. And it's really, really true. Even though, you know, I can stay busy all day checking things off my task list, and then I have this like monster at the end of the day, this boulder that I have to tackle. if I do it in reverse, somehow like half the tasks disappear because either they've been made relevant by the big thing that I've done or everything got reprioritized because I just took the time to go deep. So that's...
Oh, I hope people hear that. I am a firm believer in doing the A-list first. When your energy's best, when you really have clarity, you're not interrupted, and it all gets done, but it's hard to... There's no checklist with the A-list because it's the longer, harder, deeper project. So thanks for that reminder. That's a good one.
Yeah, thank you.